we have a, I'll give you a taste of tomorrow's lecture, somewhat. We're talking about royalty audits. And so the newest one that I've come across, actually, it started last week, has nothing to do with IT contractors.
Yeah,
you know, and there was a joint venture, a partnership between a music group and a record company. So therefore, there was no licensing agreements. It was a partnership, a joint venture. And the record company owned 60%. You'll hear this story again in the other, if you come tomorrow. And the musician owned 40%. And so, and the record company and the musician, music group is very well known, and the record company's been making a batch of money off of their bodies. And I got called in to do a royalty audit with a batch of other people. And the first statement was, you know, so we went to the accountants because it was the record company's accountants. We said, we need the documents, and they said, we're refusing to give it to you. And I said, they're an owner in the company. They own 40%. You have to. They said, no. And I said, well, how do I know that you're giving them their fair share of the 40%? You know, or the equivalent after expenses, but, you know, their fair share. And they said, well, you have to trust us. And I said, using a group, you know, a panel that we have, you know, I'm kind of skeptical of trust of a large organization to an artist. I said, trust really isn't in my framework of life. And they said, well, in the joint venture agreement, your client signed away that they could review the books and records. So I said, so you're telling me that whatever you deem to give them is in reality what they get? And they said yes. And and I grabbed the accountant and I said, what the hell is this about? He said, hey, you know, this is our new way of handling licensing and royalties.
What company was this?
I don't know. I can't say. Sorry. You would know. You would. Let me put it to you this way. You would A, know the company, and B, you would know the band. So no, I'm not saying a word. I don't care. I don't care if this. I don't trust him. I've seen him tape things that I've accidentally said.
What if the guy had told me that I had to trust him? I'd have laughed in his face.
Yeah, but I'm getting paid, so. But it's. But that is the newest trick in getting around licensing agreements, because
the band's lawyer with
that. Entertainment lawyers. I have seen entertainment lawyers, and when I say entertainment, I'm talking about the giant multimedia. We're talking about MMOPGs, musicians, artists, anything, and artists as in painters, you know, that type of. So we're talking wide spectrum. 98% of them don't know what the hell an accountant, the paragraph about audit is about. In fact, I've seen some of those things have been so badly construed and written that you sit there as an accountant, as somebody that looks at this, you know, that is going to get hired to go in, and you're sitting going, what do you guys, I mean, don't tie both my hands behind my back. Yeah. You know, every other thing was perfect. You know, it was a beautiful agreement. It's just they didn't cover the audit section. And this is in New York, and New York supposedly, if you own 20% of the company, you have total rights under New York state law to view all contracts and things of that nature, and unless you waive it. And of course, in this contract, they waived it. So, just, and we'll be talking about those types of things come tomorrow. Jeez, you got to beat the bushes for an audience.
Well, it's like a trailer. It's like just the movies. You know, it's a trailer.
Yeah. You know, this is the equivalent of an accountant's trailer.
All right. Okay, Scott. What time do you have?
I got. 10. We're going on you, Scott.
Yeah, it's your time.
All right, hit it.
Hit it. Okay.
Is it recording?
Yeah, we're recording.
We're recording. Okay.
You might want to pull the mic in a little.
First of all, let me. I'm all set. First of all, my first thing. Stay. Please. You know, also, if anybody needs a hug, I'm willing to hug anyone here.
Just remember, we're giving up the parade.
I understand. I'm going to try and make this as exciting as I can. All right. So, we're going to take a little time machine. We're in a science fiction convention. We're going to take a time machine. We're going to go back to 1999. In 1999, there it is, look, visual aids. Ha-ha. You know, three companies had a little problem. They were very small companies, Microsoft, AOL, and EA. They're cute companies. They're all in the multimedia industry. They all use IT technology. See? They knew. Yes!
Built-in soundtrack.
And I have my built-in soundtrack. And what happened, and we're going to have a story. And people that have suffered with me know they get stories. In 1987... a very, very kind of dipsy IRS agent went into Microsoft, and he was kind of brought in on the team because he had just joined the IRS, and they didn't have any place to throw him, and Microsoft has really an ongoing IRS audit continuously. And he basically took a look at a IT temp, which is what I would call an IT contractor, who was sitting at this right next to a Microsoft employee. So you had your contractor who basically was contracted by an employment agency, by Microsoft, and Microsoft paid the employment agency paid the contractor. And he watched these people for a month, both people. And you could see this is our government at work. And he basically proposed to his caseworker, that these two people were doing the identical same job. Literally, when one sharpened the pencil, the other sharpened the pencil. That's how, you know, inane he said it was. So the caseworker said, well, what do you want to do about it? And the guy said, well, you know, everybody's screaming that, you know, we don't get enough money into Social Security, or Social Security is going bankrupt. Let's reclassify them. Let's reclassify this independent contractor as an employee. And by the way, the IRS does have the power to reclassify people. Because if they didn't, everybody would be a contractor, nobody would get benefits paid, etc. Caseworker liked the idea. And they went into Microsoft and they said, everybody that's doing this type of job, now IRS, it's this type of job. It's not like specific, it's not like everybody that's writing this program for this, only that. No, this type of job, we are going to reclassify as your employee. And the Microsoft Human Resource Department basically said, you're going to reclassify 15,000 of our independent contractors as employees. The caseworker was kind of amazed. He thought he had maybe a couple hundred at best. He said, but IRS is IRS. Yes, we're going to reclassify 15,000 of your independent contractors as employees. And the Microsoft HR person said, well, here's their contract. See, they wrote that they're independent contractors. And the IRS said, eh. And the IRS class worker basically dropped a shoe that really he shouldn't have said. And he said, and you should really settle with us really quick because you're in California. Microsoft is California. And you know what the lawyers and the legal people are like in California. And you may have an issue with fringe benefits. Now, fringe benefits are usually medical insurance and things of that nature. Microsoft had a company employee stock pension plan, which, as an independent contractor, that those people were not entitled to. But as an employee, you would have been entitled to. And if you go all the way back to the 80s and take a look at Microsoft stock and how it rose up, you could be talking a hunk of money. I swear there had to be an independent, one of these independent contractors, you know, outside the door. Because all of a sudden, it was like, this is good. You know, I'm an independent contractor. If the IRS says I'm a common law employee, I would be entitled to this stock benefits. And there was case law prior to this that said, nah, you're not entitled to the benefits. But knowing the great legal profession, this gentleman, Vizcaino, went to a lawyer and said, how does this sound? Lawyer says, I get a third of the settlement, right? And yes, I'm not a lawyer, but I do cast aspersions at my fellow professionals. And they said, sure, I'll give you a third. What do I care? I'm not going to pay for you. And he said, great, I think this is a great case. So in 1999, they filed an action with Microsoft. And it was in all the papers. If you were reading that type of stuff, hopefully you weren't. Personally, I was unfortunately reading that stuff. You know, Playboy would have been much better. There's the sex part of this thing. And if you know, you missed the drug part, but I'm sorry you didn't come on time or earlier. And so Microsoft got into litigation. And everybody was saying that Microsoft is going to win this hands down. Microsoft was in California. I don't know why they thought they were going to win it hands down. But the whole issue was, you know, one guy came up, one analyst came up and said, Microsoft, if they lose this case, is going to lose $20 million. And it's going to change the entire face of IT contracting. And they kept going. And Microsoft won the first case. It went to appeal. The appellate court said, no, Microsoft shouldn't have won. Send it back down. Then Microsoft said, well, you know, you're talking 15,000 employees. That's absurd. How about we make every employee prove that they're really employees and not independent contractors? And Microsoft was, and then the next newspaper analysis said, well, the 15,000 is going to drop that to 200 people. So this is not going to be a big case. The court pretty much said, no. You agreed in a previous filing on an unrelated case, i.e. the case against the IRS, because Microsoft didn't want to pay the employment taxes at the same time. You agreed they were common law employees. So if they're common law employees, they're common law employees. And under California and federal benefit law, guess what? They're entitled to benefits. Let's move on. So from 200, went back to 15,000. And the $20 million number now went up to $35 million. Because why? Well, the case started in 1999. The court ruled that anyone that was an independent contractor from 1987 up through the new date, we're now up to 2002, could file. Could join now what is called a class action. Microsoft was not exactly jumping up and down on this one. So in 2002, Microsoft settled the case. And I guess just to, as a quick aside, $97 million they settled for. Should have settled in 99, it was only $20 million. And they instituted new rules. Because they, in essence, agreed, you know, they stipulated that they were wrong in court, which means pretty much, I was wrong, we lost. And what happened since then is the IT dilemma of every agent, of every company. Microsoft instituted a rule that no temporary employee, no permit temp, no matter how you get there, no independent contractor, can work for them longer than 365 days. They also instituted a statement that before we can rehire that person that we really want, but don't want to pay them as an employee, there has to be a 100-day lapse. So in other words, if you work for Microsoft for 364 days, Microsoft would terminate you. You would have to wait 100 days, and then they could rehire you again. This is internal Microsoft rules. So picture if you're an IT contractor, you're there, projects could go longer than a year. So what happens is Microsoft's required to fire you. You now have a 100-day layoff, which you can go to another company, and then go back to Microsoft. So other companies started to follow suit. They weren't required, but they started to follow suit. Whereupon, people were employed on an IT basis as an IT contractor for one project. And once that project was done or signed off on, they were terminated. And you have to wait a period of time because nobody, if you're hired as a contractor, nobody wants to pay you benefits. That's the big thing. Hire the contractor, hire through a contracting agency, you know, but then we don't have to pay you benefits. Humorously, if you're an employee, flat benefits, we're talking the real vanilla benefits, we're talking the employer share of Social Security, the workman's comp, the disability, and maybe a medical plan thrown in there just to spice up life. Companies are now estimating that's 20% of the base salary. So if you're getting, if an employee is getting $100,000, the company is assuming really we're paying them $120,000. So if they have other things like stock benefits and things of that nature, they're more happy to give the staffing agency $120,000 for this person. They're at even, they're at break-even level. If they have pension plans, that number goes up. The staffing agency gets it, so I'm not saying the IT contractor gets it. But this is one of the dilemmas now of IT contracting. And it's because of the Microsoft case. Now the AOL case was kind of even more humorous. AOL in the 90s had something called community leaders. It was a totally volunteer program. And people would get on to their various, you know, hi, I have a problem setting up AOL. Oh, call this community leader. Community leaders were all volunteers. They weren't paid a penny. A lot of them, you know, hey, we love the concept, we love AOL, you know, the whole nine yards. And AOL, sometimes if you really did a great job, they'd throw you a $500 bill.
Yeah.
You know, or they would give you free AOL. Well, Halassy and Williams in 1999 got kind of fed up with AOL. They were both terminated. I don't know why terminate an employee. Never terminate an employee. They sue you. You know, it's a terrible thing. And they basically said that they were entitled to minimum wage. Even though they joined class leaders, even though community leaders, even though everything they said that they would do for free, and a lot of, by the way, they did some programming for free. They would go and say, hi, this is wrong in your script. You got to change this and this, and they would actually give it and fix it. Great thing.
So they were morons.
They were enraptured. They were enraptured with AOL, and they wanted to be part of a larger community than what their current job gave them.
Like you said.
They were
Or we could call them morons. Yes, all right. They're morons. All right. Don't worry. You know, Kathleen was even better, but we'll even get to her soon. Huh?
Working for free, programming for free, giving away. Open source.
Well, no.
They were volunteering.
They volunteered, but they signed a contract.
Oh.
Community leaders all had a signed contract.
You didn't say that.
Jump in anytime. Help me. You know, it's morning. He schedules me at this hour. No, they all community leaders, I'm sorry, I thought it was known. I apologize. All community, all signed contracts because it would define what they were able to do and what they couldn't do. And they everything was given away. And so pretty much, once again, you know, litigation started. Now, this started in 1999. And this case has been going on and on and on. And this year, that's right, this year, the court ruled that they were going to reopen up because it had taken so long that anybody from 1992 to 2005, when AOL finally stopped the community leader program, okay, could join this class action suit for back wages as well as fringe benefits.
Wait, I'm confused. They signed a contract, and that's legally binding.
No, this is the fun part about the contract. First of all, a contract is legally binding, but what was their consideration? No, that's what a contract is. A contract is, consideration is a major part of a contract. That's what AOL basically didn't want to pay them.
Right.
Okay.
In the contract it says you weren't trying to get nothing.
Then that's illegal. Actually, that's what we call in the old days
slavery.
Thank you. Remember the old days? The slight, you know.
Part of the reason the courts are throwing out all these arbitration clauses as well is that doesn't make arbitration companies only interested in getting the paying companies to the back.
Right.
That's all these contracts are found under, correct?
Actually, it's founded under a different concept. Okay, and you'll love this one because I know you're going to love this one. It's called mutual mistake. If you enter into a contract and there was a mutual mistake by both parties, it is not a binding contract. So what was the mutual mistake by the volunteers?
Signing
the contract and not getting paid. So we really know that was very specific. We can really spot what the person did. That was their problem. Here's what AOL and Microsoft's problem, because Microsoft as well as ZNA all have these contracts. The companies were mistaken that they could actually enter into this type of contract. The companies were mistaken that they could actually enter into a contract with a volunteer to get services and not pay for it. And that was the company's mistake. So under the mutual mistake clause, this contract is null and void. This agreement doesn't exist because it was entered into by both sides and they're both mistaken. Microsoft, AOL, EA, they were mistaken that they could even create this contract, and the person that signed it was mistaken that they could enter and sign this contract. Yes?
So the number of lawyers that pored over all these contracts and the creation of them in order to make them stay because they're not this hard because it's a deliberate error?
I'm sorry? Yes.
It's a deliberate error that nobody cares about.
It was a mistaken error in the interpretation of the law. Yes. So, pretty much, AOL's case is still going on. Now, AOL's case is gone. Now, this is the cute part, or some of the cute parts. When the Microsoft basically stipulated, "Hi, we lost," IRS issued a ruling right after that, because they had not got paid their payroll taxes up to this point, saying, "Well, you lost, so we now have a ruling that you owe us all our payroll taxes."
Boom. Well, that's what they wanted in the first place.
What they wanted in the first place. Yeah. And they get it on the $97 million also. Which, and I want everyone to understand, which October 5th of 2007 is the date that Microsoft finally started to pay out the money. Because they fought.
Wait, what day was that?
October 5th, 2007. So, the litigation of this entire thing, Microsoft stipulating that they lost in 2002, and now you have IT contractor problems. So, the other case, EA was just as good. She basically was a volunteer. She got no money. She was an IT specialist. She helped them out on a couple of their online games. She got fired. She sued for minimum wage.
How can you get fired if you weren't ever hired in the first place?
Because there was a contract. So they terminated the contract. That contract wasn't ever ruled as invalid. Only the Microsoft and the AOL contracts were ruled as invalid.
This isn't related to the 80-hour work weeks with EA, is it?
Oh, you're talking about the artists? No, that was a lawsuit in which the artists, sued because they wanted overtime. Okay, and EA stated that they weren't entitled to overtime, and they lost that lawsuit.
They would have run up against Coke at that point, Coke decision.
I think that the EA decision, well, it was EA was out and down in Texas.
Who lost, EA or the...
EA lost. No. The graphic art. I think it was the artist. I'm not sure which class of group did sue for overtime, but I know that. I feel pretty sure that it was the artist that did it. You know, the graphic artist, and they did win their litigation. So, I mean, their cases. IRS has come out and stated, hi. There used to be a 25-point rule saying if you're an employee or if you're a contractor. And pretty much, we've broken it down a little bit better. So they kind of have a three-factor thing now. They call it behavioral control, financial control, and the type of relationship. The behavioral control is kind of easy. It's the facts that show whether the business has the right to direct and control how the worker does the task for which the worker is hired. Including that type and degree is the instruction that they, the business, provide to the worker and the training that the business provides to the worker. Now, if they're hiring an IT contractor, usually they're giving very little training because the person's already been trained in their field, but they are pretty much giving instruction of what they want done. They give you the project and they say, here's the project, program it. So under that scenario, from an employee independent contractor, if you kind of have like a little table here, that's check one to employee, not check one to an independent contractor, because they're in essence telling you what to do. Financial control.
Hmm?
It's not the technical mumbo jumbo. The issue is that if they basically say, here's the job, do it, and they're relying upon your experience and your technical background to do it, and they're not sitting over your shoulders saying, okay, go this way, go that way, go this way. I mean, if you come in and give them a finished product and they say, wait, revise this and that, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, you as an if you were an employee.
No product in the end at all.
I'm sorry?
I'm saying that there's no product in the end. That you don't have anything extra from what you began.
If You do programming, you don't have, you're creating intellectual property, which is, you write one line of code. You write one line of text explaining the code, okay? You have added something. You have created something.
It's intangible.
Which is what? That's what intellectual. Easy, easy. We're a calm group here. What is this? A guild falling apart at the seams? What are you guys doing? Casual raiding, hardcore raiding? No, we're gonna break up and die. Come now. You can see my guild's falling apart during this conference, by the way.
I think the difference might be, you know, let's say they're making a database or something. If it's a contractor, the company's going to say, we want a database, and then at that point, the contractor is going to start asking a lot of questions, and then they get the responses back, so they get the parameters. If it's an employee relationship, the company is going to tell the person, this is what we want, and I want da 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 da, and there's not a whole lot in the way of questions. And they wind up with the same thing. They wind up with the same product.
No. Let me put it to you this way. Let me explain it to you this way. Let me try. Okay? I'm going to move us totally out of IT, and we're going to move it into a field which none of you want to hear about, taxation. If I have an independent contractor working for me, I give them the information, I tell them, prepare the tax return, they come back and they give me a finished product, a tax return. If I have an employee, I'm on that employee, that employee's coming to me, I'm explaining to them where this information goes, how I want this information presented, okay, to the finished product. At the end of the day, the finished product pretty much is going to look identical from an independent contractor or my employee. But I have supervised the employee. I do not supervise the independent contractor because by hiring the independent contractor, I'm buying their technical know-how.
All right, so between, like, you lay out an employee and
an independent contractor. And a machine?
Yeah.
Okay, an independent contractor and an employee, they're both human beings, right?
No. A machine is.
Right, and I'm not talking, and you know,
yes.
Well, first of all, we're in Dragon Con. So I am not going to sit here with the robotics people next to me and say that this isn't a machine or not.
Won't. The Matrix?
No. Let me go on.
The difference is that an independent contractor the word independent here means they don't require supervision. They can self-motivate and make decisions upon how to produce a product without input from the employer.
I'm still going to get an employee that's been working there for years.
True, but we've only covered one aspect. We're in a three-prong test. The first prong is behavior. That's all we've been discussing so far. The second part is financial control.
Wait.
No, we're not waiting.
I'm trying to understand what he's saying.
Which is?
He's moving on to the next point.
I
want to know it. See, this is where the imbalance comes in.
No. I will correct your imbalance in a moment.
Okay.
Listen.
But
we're talking. No.
Listen to what he's saying.
I respect that. I respect that, and trust me. I am sure that he will retain the thought and tell you very soon. Believe me in this. Okay, believe me. He looks like a very intelligent person. He'll be able to retain the thought. But we're talking about a three-prong test, and right now we've only handled the first prong. Second prong is financial control. Does the business have the right to control the business aspects of the job? That includes reimbursement of business expenses, extent of the worker's investment, extent to which worker makes services are available to the relevant market, which I'll explain in a minute, how the business pays the worker, the extent to which the worker can realize a profit or loss. Okay, so let's talk about reimbursement of business expenses. I'm going to explain. Gotta give me a moment. You gotta give me a moment. I understand. Reimbursement of business expenses. If you as an independent contractor have business expenses, you are not reimbursed. If you as an employee working for a company have business expenses, the company will pay you back the money that you laid out. That's one. Extent of the worker's investment. If you as an independent contractor need a new computer, need to buy software, need to do anything to get that job done, you as an independent contractor are going to have to buy that software or hardware out of your own pocket. If you're an employee, the company buys it. If you're an independent contractor, you do not have to work for one company. You can work for multiple companies. If you're an employee, you're working for one company. How the business pays you. As an employee, the business is going to pay you and they're going to take out Social Security, Medicare, federal withholding tax. In certain states, you'll get state withholding tax and disability. We'll ignore all the other benefits that sometimes employees contribute to, and you will get a net paycheck. So you have your gross paycheck, all the taxes come out, you get your net paycheck. That's an employee. An independent contractor gets paid a gross fee per hour. Leasing companies get paid a gross fee for leasing you as an independent contractor. They get paid the gross fees. I would get a little bit more specific, but I'm going to lose them. Trust me, I know I'm going to lose them. So I don't want to go there yet. The extent you are now doing a project. As an employee, you get your salary. Whether that project makes money or loses money to the company, you don't care. All you care about is, give me my paycheck. As an independent contractor, you're getting a gross fee, you're going to subtract your expenses. So you're much more involved if this project is going to make money or not based on your perspective of how much you're getting paid and how much time you're giving up and the expenses related to it. Then there's types of relationships. This is the third prong. Written contracts. Now, we've all heard about how mutual mistake contracts can get overturned. But usually, you have an employee contract. It says you're an employee. This is what you're entitled to. Here are your benefits. Here are how many hours you're going to work. Down the line. Independent contractor, you now get an independent contractor. By project, hopefully. The expectation of permanency. As an employee, you have an expectation that you are not going to get fired, that this is your job. As an independent contractor, you have an expectation that once this job is done, you're out the door. Your expectation is, I am not going to get a renewing contract every year. Because if you get a renewing contract every year, they fall under Microsoft. And they know it. And they're not going to give it to you unless you find a company that doesn't know what they're doing. You know. But, you know, you always got those.
To expect is human.
To expect is?
Human.
Human?
Yeah. Not robot.
To expect is human. Well, I would assume to expect is human, yeah. To make an assumption also about my clients.
Salaried employee has an expectation that when a particular task or project is finished, they will be given another task or project. An independent contractor does not have that expectation. An independent contractor is given a task or a project, and when that task or project comes to conclusion,
I'd rather be assured that there's something
after.
I want
to work the philosophy
is
I am so on his page. It is just.
Drugs again?
We're now, by the way, we're now into the drugs part again. Anyway, as I say, hug me. No, anyway. So those are, in essence, and the government basically has this cute little, the IRS, I've seen them, has these little checkbox, and they go through these things that I just stated. And they basically do A and B, A and B, A and B, or yes and no. And if it comes down that even though you are an independent contractor, and the government says, you got too many yeses in this column, we're going to reclassify you as a common law employee. Well, they get their payroll taxes, and you as an independent contractor now under this case has the ability to sue the company for fringe benefits. Yes, sir. Please don't tell me about expectations.
No.
Okay.
If they were in fact contractors,
independent contractors,
and you know someone was paying taxes on the money that they were,
generating,
they're paying self-income taxes.
Right. Self-employed taxes. Okay, got it. I'm with you now.
So where's the difference between what you know they've been paying their taxes? Do they get a capable of going and saying, no, I wasn't, you know, this...
It's a two-edged sword. I think I know the path. Let me walk with you a little.
Okay.
You tell me if I'm there. Okay? As an independent contractor, you're being paid. We're not going to talk about leasing companies for the moment. We'll get into them really in a quick second. So you're as an independent contractor, you're being paid. You get a 1099. You put the 1099... and declare it, you take relevant tax expenses against that, you come up to a net income, that net income then basically you pay Social Security tax based on a form. And I'm not going to throw out form numbers because why do you care? You guys, I don't care. I'll be there in a second, I promise you. The problem that you have is this. First of all, you as an independent contractor have only been paying 11%. Employee-employer relationships more like 14%. So there's a higher rate. Second, if you say, hey, I want to get a benefit of this, the government says, great, you're an employee. You admit you're an employee. All those expenses you took against that income you declared should not have been taken. So let's wipe all that out because you want to take, you know, it's a cost-benefit rule. So now you've given up all your expenses. Well, but you got a little 4% refund. The difference between your Social Security you paid and what should have been. One problem, you now got a 35% federal income tax problem. Because all those expenses now disappear, and I'm giving you a 35% rate because I'm being arbitrary. 25% rate, 20%. And if you live in Georgia or a state that has state income tax, you then have to file that state and say, you know, all those expenses I used to reduce that, I now got to pay it.
But your income would have been less.
No, your income.
Your income, not necessarily.
No, because they're,
generally speaking, because your employer would have covered a lot of those things that you claimed as expenses.
True, but no. In that regard, yes, you're right. But that's why when the IRS does this, no one goes back and tries to get their 4%, because you can't go and take all those expenses that you incurred, and then basically ask the company to reimburse you for it. You could try. Company's going to sit there and say you were an independent contractor, you know, just that the IRS basically says you owe us payroll taxes, just that the courts say that we now have to pay you your fringe benefits. And the fringe benefits are not the medical insurance. The fringe benefits are the stock pension plans, those things. Yes, you thought I'd forget you, didn't you?
I'm on a 1099
Okay.
Right.
So they give you a 1099, and then they also state to you that they've withheld taxes.
Yeah, I'm on a 1099, and they withhold like 30%.
Right, and then you declare that 30% on as taxes paid.
And then I write off it.
And then you write off it. Okay, I've seen it happen. I can only state to you that your company has an interesting concept by stating that, I'll go Enjoy. She got a phone call, I understand. You know, we'll I'll come back to that conversation. Why talk? She's not here. Okay. Sure. Any questions? Let's handle questions.
Those criteria determining whether you're an employee or a contractor seem really fuzzy. And I work in IT and software, and there's a couple of them that are pretty much going to be broken almost every time you have a contractor. Mm-hmm. So is the determination on the totals, is that a hard number? In other words, if you meet 30% of the criteria, you're now an employee? Or is that itself totally up to the IRS's discretion? Could they get one check and say, you're an employee now?
I have never seen them get one check and state you're an employee now. Okay. IRS is extremely subjective, and it's subjective, and whatever they want to decide is that, and then depending how deep the company's, but I will get back to your question, but I didn't want to get, you know, you were out there, you know, what the hell. But the IRS doesn't do it on a whim, because 90% of these cases are litigated. Because the amount of money that you're talking on back payroll taxes is literally enough to put a company out of business. So usually there's a litigation. They don't do it arbitrarily. They don't do it frivolously. They try and work with the company. I mean, especially in this, because once this starts, then you got the state labor department in there. You got the federal labor relations board in there. And then you got litigation. In regards to yours, where you get a 1099 and the company pays for it, I would honestly say they better pray they never get an IRS audit, because from my perspective, if they're basically, they're, what your company is avoiding is this. The company basically, it was a very famous case, if I could remember it, we're basically, and here we go, oh, okay, our friend is gone. I'm gonna bring up a new concept. I'm gonna talk about leasing companies and how this gets into the picture. Because, by the way, the Microsoft case was a leasing company. AOL case were volunteers. Leasing companies, and let's specifically handle yours. There used to be a leasing company in the great state of Texas. It was a very major player for all the Texas industries. It basically got paid money. It paid their employees, who were the contract labor, net paychecks. And at the end of the day, the company basically got embezzled by $25 million. And the owners took the money and went to Bermuda, where you can live very well with $25 million, I'm told. I don't have $25 million, I'm not sure. And the IRS said, You, the employees, owe us all this money because we never got paid. It says on your paycheck, but we never got the money. The employees are sitting there going, we're employees. We had no control of these funds. The IRS said, we want our money. And that was the response made. But the IRS said, we don't have jurisdiction in Bermuda.
Not my problem.
But we do have jurisdiction on every company you worked for. And so we're going to make every company you work for, even though they paid the fee for the employees who then had the withholding, we're going to make the companies pony up the money.
They're paying twice.
So they paid for the fees, and they're paying for the payroll taxes that the payroll leasing company, never paid. So yes, you would say they paid, you know.
Not exactly twice.
Not about. They're getting hit again. And the company sat there and said, you can't do this. That's absurd. What are you talking about? And basically the National Labor Relations Board came in and said, yeah, they can do it. And the IRS is saying, help. Somebody's supporting us. And the National Labor said, you both were co-employees. There was a co-employee relationship. And by creating this co-employee relationship, you were both liable for the payroll taxes. Wasn't that great about National Labor? You know, IRS is sitting there going, whoa, support, and not by some idiots, you know, hey. And they got their money. So that is probably what happened to your company, where they had independent contractors or leasing company. The leasing company basically took the money, didn't make the payments of taxes, didn't do the W-2s. Blah.
So how do you stop that?
How do you stop what? I understand what you're saying. The problem is, as an independent contractor, they shouldn't be required to withhold your taxes. Okay? They're not required. In fact, they shouldn't be paying it. And then literally, you're sitting there saying, I'm billing out at $200,000 a year. Let me help you out. Please. You know, from my mouth, God's ears, your pocketbook. It's not coming in my pocketbook. And they're withholding 30%, so that means that you're walking away with 140, but you're declaring $200,000 on the 1099. They're basically physically paying your taxes for you. They would have to have an agreement. If I was an IRS agent and I was basically got out of the wrong side of the bed, didn't have my coffee, had a bad day with my significant other, and I saw that, I would be screaming this is an employee relationship under that one of the prongs. The financial prong has been met as an employee, and I would tick yes there. Therefore, all I have to do is find one more yes, because I only got three, and therefore I would reclassify you as an employee, so from an IRS perspective.
If two of the three are met, then you're an employee.
If two of the three are yet, it's up to the IRS agent. It's a subjective test. But as soon as you hit two of the three, they're looking. They want the money.
But almost every job I've ever worked for the last 12 years, I've not really been a contractor.
I would say probably true.
What were the three criteria then?
It is behavioral control, financial control, and type of relationship.
Financial control would be taxes. So
well, no, in regards to her, but it'd be reimbursement of business expenses, how much investment, who did the investment?
Behavioral control,
instruction and training. Okay, if you're, here would be a perfect, I'm sorry the gentleman's not here. If you're an employee, right, and I want you to go to the next step, I'm going to pay for your training to go to the next step. I'm going to pay for your education. I'm going to pay for all those things so that you become a more educated employee, which is going to benefit my company. If you're an independent contractor, you better know what the hell you're doing when you come in the door for me. I'm not going to pay for your training. I'm not going to pay to send you to school. You're an independent. It's your, no offense meant, it's your problem.
On each of the three, how would you craft it so that you could avoid that?
As an employer?
Yeah.
Usually you...
How do you get some contractor to be trained in a new piece of gear that you're getting that you want them to work on without establishing an employee relationship?
It's their problem.
If I'm an employer and I'm a, no, I understand. If I'm an employer and I want to get this person trained, an independent contractor trained, all right, I would make it a requirement of their job that they have this type of training. No. As an independent contractor, you're signing an independent contractor agreement with them. So therefore, one of the stipulations you have in that contract, they know how to work this machine. Okay? It's their job to go out and get the training to learn how to work it.
If you reimburse them for it?
If you reimburse them for it, then you have developed an employee relationship.
How do you stop a co-employee?
How do you stop?
Face the leasing company, how do you stop a co-employee relationship?
There is almost no ability now to stop a co. The National Labor Relations Board now has a require as it's all pretty much, if you go to a leasing company, if you use a leasing company, you pretty much have created a type of co-employee relationship. But that doesn't mean that their employees are your employees, only if they basically abscond with payroll taxes. Yes?
A lot of talks I've seen on the required skills for certain contractors, they go to the contractor will go and get that training and then add that to the amount that he wants on the contract.
Right, but that in essence, that's not a reimbursement of expense. That's basically, hi, you want me to get that? It's going to cost me $250 or $2,000 to get that. Therefore, I'm going to say I was going to originally give you this contract for $10,000 to do the job. I now want $12,000, or really, you should really want $12,500 because you should be wanting to make a little bit of a profit on his money that he's laying out to do the job. Yes.
I think back to the point, though, you said that there are three criteria. And okay, even if they are showing you because they have a very specialized equipment set, even if they are training you on that, they still haven't met a financial or the control aspect. They've met the behavioral.
Yeah, but you met the behavioral, but then if you reimburse them for the training?
But that's what I'm saying. They're not reimbursing them for the training. They're just showing you how to use the equipment. And that's it. They're paying the leasing company or they're paying you the gross pay.
But you're making the assumption that the trainer that's going to train the equipment, that will train you on the equipment, is in-house.
Sure. Why would they need a contractor to add somebody new in-house?
Right. I mean, it's like there's these old, I think they're called Hammershine printing presses. You can't kill them. You can't, you know, they're like there forever. I swear, you know, World War IV will happen. You know, forget three, four. These things are going to be there, and they're still going to work. I mean, I think they come from the turn of the century. There are people, you can't train on them anymore. The people that know how to use them are dying off. But, you know, there are people that are independent contractors. That's all they go around and do. Hi, you have this model, this make. Yeah, go ahead. I'll show you how to use it. I'll come in as an independent contractor. Yes, sir.
Where's the line in behavior between...
It's subjective.
Come in and do this and working closely with your client?
Subjective. It's based on your contracts that you've already created with the independent contractor. It's based with the documents that are created. I mean, if you're an IT specialist, you got documents like, you know, every time you put a code, you got a, you know, a dialogue on the other side, what this code is, the commentary in the code itself. Any other type of independent contractor is creating documentation. Why? So that when they leave and somebody comes to take their place, it's not like they don't have to restart.
So you behave as if you're going.
You have to. Your expectation as an independent contractor is you are going to leave.
What's the difference between doing applications and working closely with the customer?
There is none. From an independent contractor, employee, from a perspective of employee versus independent contractor, customer service is what you're talking about. You could have independent contractor customer service. They can be reclassified as employees.
Really?
Yep. Yes, ma'am.
Cause for concern. I think a lot of companies, especially large companies, are using contractors because HR makes it so difficult to hire employees that even though, you know, I think it may be in the employer's head that being more of an employee, the only way to get through the HR troll bridge is to bring them in as contractors. And
it comes out of a different budget.
And it comes out of a different budget.
That's, I understood that's what comes.
Well, okay. Get to your question because I'll tell you. I'll give you my, because I'm on a lot of insights of companies, why we hire independent contractors.
Well, I'm in a situation where I'm working for a very large company as a contractor, and you know, I'd be three out of three. You know, I'm definitely an employee, not a contractor. But I don't know that I'd want to say anything about it because it would probably end up that they just lose all the contractors.
No, they won't be. They can't release the contractors because if they release, I mean, a perfect example is Microsoft couldn't release 15,000 people, okay? Because if they released 15,000 people, they wouldn't have X amount of jobs were not going to get done. X amount of projects weren't going to get done, and in fact, they basically took almost 12,000 of those 15,000 and made them employees. I mean, to tell you what they did. HR is given certain specifics from division heads of what they're looking for. It is a lot easier to hire someone of a technical expertise at, in essence, a cheaper rate than as an employee. Because when you hire an employee, you're hiring an employee, they get a base salary. Independent contractor, or even from the leasing company, is getting a little more. But the company is thinking, we don't have payroll taxes, we don't have vacation, we don't have sick days, we don't have medical insurance, we don't have 401k plans. We don't have employee stock plans. Especially if they're a publicly traded company, they're screaming for independent contractors. Why? Because here's the humor. And it's the same humor that you'll hear later on in my next lecture, tomorrow. At some time, whatever. Is that...
Probably. What's it on?
No, it's 5:30 actually. 5:30. Royalty licensing audits. Is that, hey, you got to cover all the bases in DragonCon. Give me a break. Is that if you're a publicly traded company, every dollar that you save is potentially $1 to $5 to $10 to $20 of a stock price, depending on their multiple and depending on the amount of shares. So you could literally, I mean, I sat there in a public company, and we basically figured out that we could save, by independent contractors, we could save 10% of our total gross salary that we were going to allocate out to salary on a budget basis, and that will actually increase the stock by
$3. Don't you have a duty to your stockholders?
Increase the value of their stock, as long as you don't break the law. Yes, sir.
Is BDS, now HP, considered this leasing company concept you're going to do? Because they get hired by companies to do an IT function.
They get hired as an outsourcing organization, yes. But the issue there is that HP basically will fail. When you hire HP, you're going to fail the financial control. For HP automatically. You're going to probably fail the type of relationship. Because HP, you ever see an HP contract? HP contract's about, I saw one. I only saw one, so I have to base it only on that experience, and I'll extrapolate out. It was 52 pages. Okay, so if you fail the type of relationship because you got this giant contract, you fail the financial relationship because HP is just getting a giant check. And then it pays its employees, whoever they deem to be. But HP is paying them. You know, if they didn't have that job, they'd still have those employees anyway. You know, they didn't bring those employees on to specifically do that job. They had the employees there. So behavioral control, yeah, they'll probably lose that one. The IRS isn't going to, you know, you're going to be employees of HP and not of, you know, whoever they're basically ITing out. Okay. Yes, sir. And then.
Well, not only as far as why the companies are really more interested in contractors versus employees, it's not just the hiring, having to wade through the hiring process, it's the flip side of the coin. When we decide that we don't want you anymore, it is a whole lot easier to fire. Even if you're an employee of a leasing company, it's a whole lot easier to make you go away than an employee.
Well, it depends on your state. It depends on your state because there are right to work laws, and you know there are certain states. I happen to live in New Hampshire, and we can fire anybody. You know, I don't like you. You're fired. You know, and the state's going to sit there and say, we like the reason. You know. Yes, sir.
The capital improvement touch on this at all. Last couple companies I've worked for. Probably 2 or 3 years ago started having development time accrued. There were long lists of rules what kind of development could be capitally improved and what couldn't. But I guess what they were claiming was that stuff that was improving any of the software we had of adding significant features could be written off as improvements, just that it was described as just putting a deck on your house.
No, that was that. All right, that falls more really not under regards to independent contractor employee. That really falls under, that's really revenue recognition rules, the new revenue recognition rules, and when are they required to recognize income based on the project you're working on versus not. Obviously, as the issue is that if they have a project, from a U.S. accounting and tax standpoint, the faster you get a project potentially out the door that you can go out and sell it, the faster I can start writing it off. Okay? Now, the U.S. is basically, I love this part, we're really deviating, which is probably, if you ever see me do these things, we deviate all over the place, is that the U.S. general accepted accounting principles, which is what we've been in essence talking about with IRS laws, are going to be abandoned within 3 years. And what is going to replace them is the International Financial Reporting Standards. So you see these strange articles saying, the IFRS is coming. You know, it's like, oh, good, it's like the Beatles coming, you know, the British invasion, you know, for those people that remember that. I got 5 minutes. So what is happening is that everything becomes in a state of flux. From a point of view, many things that you're seeing in your contracts are going to be changing because now they're going to have to go to different accounting standards.
Well played.
You know, why can I tell you?
Okay. How do you characterize the differences?
No, let me handle him first. Yes, sir.
With the fact that it's, even though they're paying more for the contractors, like in all, it looks like the contractor's making more,
yep,
salary-wise than an employee, then what would really be their point, like, you know, like you said, easy firing, you know, work out doing like the temp firm positions where, you know, they start them out with the contractor salary and, you know, eventually make them permanent, but I doubt they cut that back down afterwards.
Actually, when you go in, when you're a temp, and you then go into a perm, actually you're going to, I would expect that you're going to eat a couple of dollars.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not going, if you're getting, I mean, I like round numbers, so live with me on this. If you're getting $200,000, and I can only pray that you are getting $200,000 on every contracting job that you do. Exactly, and he should one day listen to me. He ignores me, probably doesn't, he needs to hug me. No, anyway, is that they're not going to offer you the $200 as an employee. They're going to basically take a look at everybody of that class that you're doing, and you will maybe go at the top bracket, okay? But you will not get your 200. You may get 150. But from your perspective, I'm getting 150. But, oh, wait.
I don't have to do my own taxes anymore.
I got a W-2. Yeah. They're going to withhold. But really, the more important part is I don't have to pay for anything. No more computer investment. No more software investment. My medical insurance all of a sudden is covered for me, possibly my family. I got child care. I got 401k, pension, sick day, all these things.
I have nothing to do, but I still get paid.
Right. I'm sitting there paying Star Wars Combine, and, you know, and I'm getting paid for it. This is a good thing in life. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have a suggestion for those of us that truly are employees but getting paid in 1099s, you know, what would be a suggested path of how to
see a lawyer?
You don't want to go that
extreme. I would, first of all, as soon as you get a lawyer, you're fired. Yeah. All right, so let's walk that.
Exactly.
All right, the issue I always say is you have to take a look at the economic effect of being an employee versus independent contractor. You know you're not going to get as much money. Okay, so your net pay versus what your take home is going to be reduced. Your taxes are going to be higher because you don't have all these expenses you can write off. So you really have to do an economic evaluation. Do I want to be an employee or do I want to be an independent contractor? At which time, if you come and say, really, I want to be an employee, then the next step you can do is, you see, you need them to be, you can go to the HR department and say, what or how much would you be willing to pay me for me to become an employee? Because if you go to the state, which is would be your next step, you don't need an attorney. You just need to file a complaint with the state. They'll walk in, and you will get fired. Yes, sir.
I'm breaking the theme, man.
Yeah. No, she's pretty much, they go to the military, they hire everyone. And they're all employees.
What are you kidding? Uh-huh. What's your credit rating nowadays? The military doesn't hire anyone.
But you can't really force a company to make you an employee. The problem is if they let you go as an independent contractor and you were an employee in your mind and they had a fringe benefit program, the Microsoft case is ugly. You bring up that case to them, and they are going to sit there, and if the HR department has any brains, they're going to sit there and basically try and deal with you. Because they don't want a class action suit. They're not scared of you. They're scared of a class action suit of all they have done from the day one to now. And by the way, they basically stated because it's an employee, common law employee relationship, there is no statute of limitations. A lawyer will say, oh no, you have to file in 3 years. No, back pay is not thrown out because you didn't get your back pay because they haven't paid you in 3 years. So therefore they don't have to. No, back pay doesn't work that way. Back pay is there forever. That's why Microsoft sold for $97 million. It was getting ugly.
Assuming you do follow that path,
yes.
How does this affect your future employment possibilities?
In what regard?
Let's say you go, you take some extra benefits for 3 years that you work with, you put a resume out, the company looks at you like, well, they said they're last employer. I'm not really interested in this person. How much damage does that potentially do to you?
That would be a discrimination case. That's a description. You could literally sit there and say, I mean, there was a famous case where basically somebody whistleblowed their company. They got millions for it, and then they couldn't get another job. And so they sued the next company, and they actually got money again because it was a discrimination. No, it was basically in there. It's put in their permanent employee record.
Oh, we found someone else that had better skills.
Yeah, but then you got to open up and prove it. You see, the problem is proving that they found somebody else that had better skills. I mean, that's really, again, you got a resume, hi, I have 30 years experience. These are all my projects I've done. Yeah, I whistleblew my last company and made a couple million. And here you got this kid coming out of college, and you're saying that this person has equal skills than I do. You get into a lot of discrimination and labor law. So it's not, you basically do that. I mean, all the people that work for Microsoft, pretty much they're all employed by other companies now. You know, it's not, I mean, Williams is employed and he sued AOL. You know, it's litigation, you know, litigation and big business is saying, great, they're gonna potentially litigate. You know what, I need their skill set so I can make money. And I'll worry about the litigation problem later because I can deal with your litigation. I can't deal with a class action. One person is a joke. 15,000 people, it's not that funny. Any other questions? Yes.
Who in here is an unemployed IT worker? Nobody? Okay. I'll admit it for you.
Unemployed.
Unemployed.
No, what? All right, he brought up, I'll leave you with this. What is happening is, why are companies going outside the United States to do jobs? Why?
Cheaper
labor, and they don't have to worry about this case because the IRS doesn't litigate, doesn't go to those companies. It falls outside the jurisdiction of labor protection laws. That is why more and more companies go outside
Canada.
Than Canada, Manila, Philippines, India.
Hyderabad.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Quick characterization about the.